This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
By the Book on BFM 89.9.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to By the Book. I'm Lee Chui Lin. Joining me, as always, is, I can't say my fellow because I think you're actually more familiar, but a lover of Lovecraft, Shyamala Ganesan.
Reluctantly, yes.
Yes, I know that that's a statement that needs qualification. But the reason why that is your designation today is because we are actually going to be joined by Kiran Baladevan, who is a stand-up comedian, for our monthly book club. And this month, we're actually talking about a novella, which is The Ballad of Black Tom by Victor Laval. Firstly, Kiran, welcome to the show.
Hello, thank you very much. Very nice to be here. Thank you.
So, okay, usually with book clubs, it's one of two things, right? Either we ask our guests to read something, or we ask them what they would like us to read. And in this case, you recommended this. Perhaps you could start off by telling us why.
I recommended this one was because when y'all asked to choose a book, I was thinking like I could either go with something that I have read before or I haven't read before. And this is something that I was been wanting to read, The Ballad of Black Tom. And I'm also like a huge horror fan and a huge cosmic horror fan as well. And I think this particular book, before I read it, it seemed very intriguing. And then after I read it, I'm like, it's still intriguing, but then also I'm like, oh, ayo, this is how things are.
Is this how things are? I think actually, I mean, we don't often issue warnings for books and it's not that bad, but this book, I think you need to be in kind of the right headspace to read it because it's a dark book. It's not going to leave you feeling better by the end. It is set in the past, but it definitely draws on real human horrors, not just of the supernatural kind that still exist in the world today. So yeah, just fair warning, don't go into this expecting anything happy or any happy endings.
I like how the first time you had me, you're having me on this show as a stand-up comedian, and then we are discussing a book that will not make you happy.
Yeah, truly, I mean, even all the laughter we're having now is bitter laughter, really, because that's the kind of thing that this book leaves you with. So it's worth saying that part of the darkness comes from the way in which the story looks at very, well, I would say themes that have always been relevant, but have a particular relevance perhaps in recent years. And it is a revisiting, not a retelling, re-look at a H.P. Lovecraft story, The Horror at Red Hook. And so I don't know how much of the story y'all think we should be able to tell on air.
I think we can say that it basically responds directly to that short story, but by pivoting whose point of view the story is told from. And it revolves around a young Black man named Thomas Tester, and his place within the story in 1920s New York, at a time, of course, when segregation was very much still a thing. And so it gives that kind of background to this original short story, which revolves around an incident that happened in the Red Hook neighborhood in New York. And I think that's kind of all you need to know, because it's not a huge book and it's not a long book. So and of course, knowing that it's inspired by Lovecraft and all of the things that we've already said, there's something more supernatural, more horrific going on in the backdrop. But it's also very much about race relations and particularly the discrimination that Black people faced in the US.
Kiran, was there anything, I suppose, that particularly stood out for you in terms of whether it's the way the story was told or what the story contained that made you want to discuss it?
Definitely. I think what drew me to it, first of all, was the fact that, okay, we can look at this particular story that H.P. Lovecraft did, Horror at Red Hook, from the perspective of basically the person that H.P. Lovecraft hated. Because, I mean, discussing, especially in this day and age, it's very hard nowadays, especially to separate the art from the artist. So there's no denying that Lovecraft has had a huge impact on horror, even to this day, like modern horror. But he was also a very racist person. So to have a a Black author and African-American author, Victor Lavelle, tried to come to terms with it and put his own spin on cosmic horror using Lovecraft's work. I thought that was very, very interesting because you can still see racism happening to this day, right? And you have all these years and years and generations of art that has been, you know, for the lack of a better term, not very progressive back then. But I like that this is one way to tell people that, hey, you don't have to not talk about it. You know what I mean? You can still talk about the things that were horrific, that were bad. But now, I guess this is putting the power into people so that they can now tell stories through new light and say, like, just because we went through something horrific doesn't mean we can't create our own stories to, I guess, make us feel more powerful.
I just wanted to say that Lavelle actually dedicates the book for H.P. Lovecraft. And, yes. And I love this, with all my conflicted feelings.
Yeah.
And I think as a reader of H.P. Lovecraft, someone who grew up loving his works, and then I actually revisited this story after reading the novella. And knowing on the one hand, Lovecraft has this racist legacy, but also revisiting a story that I last read decades ago and then realizing exactly how bad it is now. I think that forward tells you a lot about the place that Lovecraft has for so many writers, but also what it means to interrogate that kind of legacy. And I thought this book, the reason I enjoyed it so much was, as you said, Kiran, it really does show you how great fiction or great writing or great art can actually come from the pain and the conflict you feel from both loving something but also feeling excluded by it.
Correct. Exactly. I really don't feel that art should never be discussed, no matter how painful or not it might have been. And I guess people like us, artists, anybody else who enjoys art, who thinks art is important, I think it is also important that just because something is painful doesn't mean we can't recontextualize it later on to make it fit in the new world. You know what I mean? I mean, there are a lot of themes in this book that, even like you said, even though it's set in the 1920s, it still deals with racism that's still happening to this day. Right. So I guess the best kind of art is the one that remains timeless and humanistic.
So on that point, right, in terms of talking about the art of it and the response to it and the human element, I wanted to talk about the characters, because I think that as we said, this is the retelling or the reshifting of the viewpoint of the story, right, into the eyes of a Black man living as a Black man in 1920s Harlem, specifically Harlem, and venturing out of that into places in New York that actually, as he describes it, feel like completely different places and countries and lands. Like they're just entirely different from the world he occupies, from where he comes from, right? When he goes from neighborhood to neighborhood, it's completely different. The demographics shift, but so too does the housing, the way things look. And I think it's important to talk a little bit about Tommy Tester, because you meet him at the beginning at a certain point in his life. There are impetuses and triggers that change him along the way. And the person that you know at the end of the novella is a completely different person.
Yeah.
And that journey needs to feel quite real and deeply felt. And I think that the reason why this worked for me is actually because I understood, you know, who this person is and what might cause him to change or to develop further along the path that he eventually walks.
Yeah. I like how one of the main things was this book goes by at a very, very quick pace. And for them to fit that kind of characterization of the main protagonist from someone who you almost immediately get where he's coming from, what he's doing, what his motivations are, I think... like Victor Lavelle wrote a really, really strong character for you to just project on, I think, because you have this 20-something guy from New York at a time where racism is an all-time high, just trying to get by and take care of his ailing dad, or as they mentioned in the book, his dying dad. And to see him go through that journey, you kind of understand why he's doing what he's doing. So at no point did I feel that I didn't understand his motivation. Like nothing felt out of place. It all felt correct, even when he started doing the more intense things. It all felt like, yeah, you know what? I get it. I understand.
And all of those things you said, Lynn, the way, you know, within the space of a relatively small book, the way the author describes how people look at him, the kind of body language he needs to adopt so that he doesn't get questioned, how he sees the world, how he is seen by the world. All of these things are actually captured so well so that we understand without needing to know too much. I mean, all of this happens over a few days, really, but without need. Or rather, we read a few days. And despite not getting a whole lot, we get so much in those moments just because I think the writing is very strong in giving you a sense of place, a sense of time, and more importantly, the sense of the attitudes that caused him to turn out the way he did.
We're speaking today about The Ballad of Black Tom, written by Victor Laval, which is a fantasy horror novella that responds to H.P. Lovecraft's original story, The Horror at Red Hook, which is actually known as one of his more problematic, more racist ones, you know, when read now, basically. We'd like to hear from you. Have you read it? Are you a fan of Lovecraft? Are you a conflicted fan of Lovecraft? You can let us know. WhatsApp is 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio.
Beating fickle mindsets. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello, everybody. You are listening to Buy the Book with Lynn Sharmila. And today, Kiran Baladevan, who is a stand-up comedian, joining us for a deeply unfunny book because it is our monthly book club. And we're talking about The Ballad of Black Tom by Victor Laval. So I wanted to, before we get into the Lovecraftiness of it all, which we have to, we haven't actually talked about him yet. I wanted to also mention, we spoke about the Black character, Tommy Tester, and how crucial he is to the whole book. I actually think that the white characters are also very telling because Tommy comes into the sphere basically of Robert, I don't actually know how to say his name, Robert Soydam, and he is the one who kind of invites him into a mysterious, perhaps Kabbalistic setting. You know, you're not entirely sure what's going to happen. You also have the tough racist cop, you have a tough racist private detective, you have a sensitive cop who is himself you know, not free of these sorts of racist thoughts and tropes that inform everybody else. And I actually think that the way the white characters are written is really interesting, because when you read it as a person today, it's very hard not to look at them with a kind of disgust, but it's not done in such a way that they become caricatures.
I thought, because the original story revolves around Malone, who is one of the cops that the cop that you mentioned, I found it so interesting the way he is, especially his character, is twisted or sort of given a different light in this book. Absolutely, what you said about how the casual language that people use, the way in which white cops have so much obvious power and just seem to take it for granted. Reading it feels, it made my skin crawl. It made my skin crawl reading such casual, casual, harmful racism being practiced. But I think where the book really succeeds and where the white characters really shine, not in the best of ways, is in him examining not just the extreme racism, but as you said, the harm that people who sort of seem to think they are not like the others can also cause. And you know, that's where it gets really interesting, because he holds almost all white people complicit. And I found that a very interesting, I found the way he did that extremely thought-provoking within the space of the book.
All of the three main white characters, despite their motivations, all of them still had this mindset, this attitude of being better than a minority, right? No matter what their motivations, we have the blatantly racist private detective. we've got Robert Sridham, this eccentric wealthy man. And then we've got the police character he's sensitive. He doesn't like what he's doing. He doesn't like where he is. But at the end of the day, all three of them still have that thread of, I'm still better than a black person. Right. So them writing three different people, three different motivations, but still have that underlying tone there. I think it's very telling of what I guess people think they are in relation to other people.
Mm.
So that I think, and how Tom relates to these three people, I found it extremely interesting and very well written, actually, because at a few points, I kind of as I was reading it, I was thinking, okay, should I now empathize for this white character? Should I empathize for them or not? You know what I mean? And to make you feel that way, to make you think, oh, wait, okay, obviously a white cop in 1920s is going to be racist, right? But then at one point, I'm like, hey, wait, maybe not. And then after that, I'm not even sure.
And or you go like, oh, maybe he's not as bad. And so that makes him okay. But then that's a slippery slope.
So that's the thing. The part that I found especially cool about the way this was written is that it's a novella, which means that he managed to pack all of this characterization and all these subtleties into what is a very slim little bit of book, and in which you don't necessarily have point of view chapters for every single character. So yeah, I really like that. I do think, however, that we have to talk now about Lovecraft, and specifically about where this story fits into the larger cosmology of Lovecraft's works, and also how it responds to the very specific hatred of Red Hook, frankly, that H.P. Lovecraft originally had.
You know, for all that it responds to Lovecraft, right? And then I'm glad, like, I read this novella with enough of a gap from Red Hook, the short story, and also not fully realizing it was responding to that story yet, that when they started making these references in the novella, when you know, they name, certain titles that you might recognize if you've read Lovecraft, I was like, ooh, I wonder where this is going. I wonder what we're going to see. And ultimately, you don't see a whole lot. And I love that. Like, it's almost like Lovecraft looms over the story in a particular way, but also ends up being not that big a deal. And I think that's an interesting approach, because in the end, the Lovecraftian horror, the Eldritch horror, as it were, is there, but it's also kind of not really the point.
Yeah, it's supposed to be more of letting the reader experience that existential dread of, you don't know what is wrong. You know something is wrong, you don't know what it is. And the idea of something being unknown and something being completely out of your control is what is supposed to give you the most amount of fear. Which, and like you said, for a novella, it's pretty dense. For a novella, I was very surprised that like Victor Lovell fit all of that in such a relatively small book.
I described myself to Sharmila off air as Lovecraft aware, more than, a sort of Lovecraft lover, so to speak. So I'm aware of Eldritch horror. I know about the Supreme Alphabet and, you know, the kinds of personages. Is that fair to say? I don't know. Creatures.
That felt very appropriate.
Yes. Yeah.
that are referenced within the novella. And what I liked about it, therefore, is that I think even if you have just the most passing of familiarities with Lovecraft, it is quite rewarding, because it kind of sits within that larger mythos, right, that he's worked towards and creates. And I like the idea of a black man saying, yeah, I know that you didn't want me here, but you created it now, and your work belongs to readers as well. And I'm just going to insert my own story where it sits. So I appreciated that. I also appreciated the fact that to your point, Kieran, about the existential dread, I think the other word I would use alongside dread is creeping. So there is this idea of a creeping horror. The horror builds and builds and builds. It starts off with you with a very real life situation, right? I think for anyone who's ever felt discriminated against, for anyone who's ever felt as if they were up against sort of an invisible wall that they couldn't fully address. It starts with those kinds of mundane everyday horrors. And then before you know it, there's like a great sleeping being. And then before you know it, there are doors that open to nowhere. and I like that kind of ratcheting up of the horror from the mundane and everyday to the straight up existential.
Yeah. Yeah. It gave that idea of you can still have things that make you afraid and things that keep you up at night on a daily basis in everyday life. And then the good thing about cosmic horror is they say, okay, you have that. That can make you scared as well. Also, how about this? Right? So here's another thing that you can't control and another thing that's going to make you scared and might kill you or worse. Because the thing about cosmic horror is there are a lot of things worse than death.
So I also, this got me thinking a lot about the heart of Lovecraftian horror, right? Which is, and the heart of racism, actually, which is the fear of the unknown. Mm. And you know, Lovecraft, so much of what he wrote was about this grand horror, this grand fear of the unknown. And he even describes it as, you know, knowing will drive you mad. So the fear of the unknown. But actually, this book ends up being about, well, sure, there's the fear of the unknown and whatever not. But, you know, the thing I know is the thing I fear the most. And I love how he flips that. And because Lovecraft's racism, particularly in the horror of Red Hook, is so much about the people he doesn't know, immigrants and people who don't look like him and people who live like they, like, you know, languages that he doesn't understand. I love that Laval actually just completely flips that around and instead addresses really the fear of the things that he really does know and how they can often be worse in some ways.
Yeah. Which is why the all the racist things that happen in the story, as scary as they are, really hammered in the point of you can go looking for things that are going to make you feel afraid. That is going to, you know, keep you up at night and give you nightmares and all that. You can go looking for fantastical things, but also you can just look out your door and you can see a lot of those things in real life as well. And to put both of that in this context, in this story, which is essentially a fantasy story, I thought it was really powerful. It was really to see both of that juxtaposed between each other. And it was really, really fun.
On a much lighter note, the story also follows the traditional structure of an origin tale, which I liked. I think, you know, it's whether Black Tom ultimately is an anti-hero or a hero or a villain. You know, I suppose it depends on what perspective you're looking at it from. But the structure of the tale is actually a classic. It's Batman, you know, so there is that as well, which I liked. I wanted to ask you both, there's supposed to be an adaptation. It has been, you know, I think the rights have actually been sold for an adaptation. Keen, not keen, excited?
Very keen.
Not so much?
I'm very excited. Like reading the whole novella, I kept imagining it as a movie. I think it's written very cinematically. After watching something like Lovecraft Country, which I know, Kiran, you enjoyed thoroughly. I have mixed feelings about because I love about three quarters of it. I think Lynn, you're about there because I did
about
the
review
yeah. with you. Yeah. Mm. But I can see the potential for this being realized. The whole climax of the book, I can imagine that looking great with the right director on screen.
Definitely, 100%. As I was reading this as well, I just kept flashing back to Lovecraft Country and the way they did it there. And I think if they are going, I generally don't like when books are adapted because it can go really wrong. We've all seen it before. But I think this one is primed to be adapted after what happened with Lovecraft Country and how good it was. To see something like this on screen, to read something like this, where you essentially take something that is very problematic, but then you put the power back into the people, I think it's really, really, I'm excited to see what they do with it. And also, to get back to what you said just now, Lynn, about what you think Tom is he a hero, is he an anti-hero? I want to ask both of you, what do you think? Is he a hero, is he an anti-hero?
Anti-hero for me, I think, only because of all the things that end up happening towards the end. but anti-heroes are not bad. They're just not always right? Or they do the things we can't do or won't do, perhaps.
I would qualify that statement with deserved things that happen towards the end, to be fair. So I think of him as a tragic anti-hero. I think that that's why I mentioned Batman. There are very specific reasons why that's the case also. But I don't think of him as a villain. I think of him as someone who pushes past the worst, the absolute worst thing that can happen to you, and then just keeps going and does so. Whether or not we think he's insane, I think is also something that needs to be discussed, which is a very Lovecraft thing, right? People going truly mad. Right. But I don't think he is, for me, anti-hero. Kieran?
I don't even think he's either a hero or anti-hero. The way I interpret was someone who was pushed so far that his only recourse to take action was what he did in the book. To go so far down that rabbit hole of, all right, they're pushing me. I have no place in this world. They've basically taken everything from me. So now let me take things back from them. Right. So to see a character being written where they just go, you know what? Damn everything else. I'm going to burn it all down. It was very refreshing, to be honest.
Yeah, I think that there is something cathartic about it. If also incredibly sad. I think it is worth saying that the book overall is sad. We said it at the start. I think it's worth saying at the end. But anyway, we've been talking today about The Ballad of Black Tom, which is a novella by Victor Laval in response to H.P. Lovecraft's The Horror at Red Hook, introduced to us by Kieran Baladevan, who is our guest today. Kieran, thank you so much for joining us.
No problem. Thank you very much. I'm really glad you all enjoyed it. It's very nice to read something this fun, this dark. And if anybody ends up reading it, please read it with an open mind. And also, no matter what you're going through in life, just please don't go worshipping Eldritch gods. I don't think anything good will come of it. But if you do, just give me a call. I'll join.
Honestly, at this point, right, who isn't curious? Who isn't a little bit curious? Anyway,
who wouldn't walk down those stairs?
Right? This is the problem. This is ultimately the problem with all of us, probably. Let us know if you have read The Ballad of Black Tom, if you are someone who enjoys the writing of H.P. Lovecraft. You can let us know. WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio. Write to us at buythebook@bfm.my. Brings us to footnotes. So I think for this segment of the show, we just wanted to expand on a theme that we touched on quite a bit in the main body, right, of that book club, which is the idea of the response, the ability to respond to something from a different age and era, which I think we might love and yet fundamentally completely disagree with. And this is actually something that we see happening a lot, sometimes explicitly like this, which is really framed in a very specific way. But other times, I think just looking again at things that were familiar, but maybe need to be retold.
I'm going to bring up something that I think nobody would expect in the context of what we've talked about just now, but I was thinking a lot about, which is the Sweet Valley High books.
A good time.
Because it gets me thinking a lot about how it was so formative for me at a particular age, right? Books like that, books about high school and girls and boys and falling in love and all of that stuff. Not to say they're not enjoyable, not to say that I wouldn't still think they'd be enjoyable for kids of a certain age, but it does get me thinking about how differently I think of the values that books like that espouse, right? This idea of needing to be beautiful in a particular way, having to behave in a certain way to get a boy, the whole idea even of what romance is, how boys treat girls, so many of these things, which when I look back now, I wonder, how did that shape who I became? And do I necessarily like that that happened?
I'm going to bring up a writer who hasn't actually written anything we've read. And that is Carrie Bradshaw, because of the way you said that. No, I mean, it's a connection, right? Like, I recognize I'm talking about TV here on a book show. But when you said, I couldn't help but wonder, I was thinking about how even that phrase is shaped by these sorts of tropes that we see. And I think the thing about Victor Laval and his retelling of Lovecraft, and as you pointed out, the dedication to Lovecraft at the front, tells you a lot about how I think formative writers in some ways are obviously deeply influential for us, but also sometimes the ones who strike the deepest scars. And so it's not surprising to me that somebody who is interested in fantasy and horror would be heavily influenced by Lovecraft, would therefore also be conflicted about it, which is why I'm not surprised you brought up Sweet Valley High, because we've both talked about how, you know, our gateway to reading. I was thinking of fairy tales and how increasingly there is a whole movement of authors in ways big and small, right, who are very actively invested and interested in reconsidering myths and reconsidering fairy tales. And I think there are very specific reasons for that, because girls often get punished in fairy tales. Girls who stray beyond the bounds of their homes, girls who disobey their parents, girls who are out too late, who wear red, you know, all these different things. And I think, you know, from a writerly perspective, it makes a lot of sense to look at that and think, well, okay, these were the values I grew up with. Are they necessarily the values I live with now, or the values that I want girls to grow up with or boys to grow up with, and whether it's worth retelling, which is why we see so many retellings to varying degrees of success. I have to say, not everything's equally good, but I think that that's what informs that desire to respond to the Grimm brothers.
No, I think that's a great power in the retelling. I think of myself as a kid writing my own Enid Blyton quote unquote stories, where I just lifted whatever happened in like the faraway tree, but replaced their treats with like kueh lapis and curry puff. And, you know, the kids all had Indian or local names, because I wanted so desperately to be a part of the story that she was telling, but I couldn't find myself in there. Right. I don't think I realized what I was doing. I don't think that me doing that was a sort of yearning to belong in this world in a way that the world didn't have space for. But I can see why that's such a powerful act now. I can see why writers want to do it. And I can also see why the counter argument of why can't you just write your own stories instead of reimagining, it's not quite the same thing, because it's going to be decades before a writer writing a new thing now becomes the kind of influence that Enid Blyton is now. What perhaps is powerful is that reclaiming.
But also I wanted to bring up the fact that in the case of The Ballad of Black Tom, it's not just a reclaiming, it's also a disruption of the pantheon. And not every writer has a pantheon, to be fair. I'm not sure I would think of Famous Five and Secret Seven as secret texts. How dare I?
How dare you?
I knew you were going there. The five finder outers. But the thing about it is that I think there is power, not just value, but like you said, power, not just in the retelling, but also in actively kind of making space in a thing that has been traditionally occupied by a certain type of person, a certain type of author, and saying, look, you created the world, but and with respect, I am entering it because I'm going to play to the rules of your world, but I'm going to change the politics because these are not the politics that I stand for, which is what we see in The Ballad of Black Tom and also what we see in these various retellings. I don't think it's as simple as saying, I'm just going to start a new story. Instead, it's saying, I recognize the value, power, and strength of the world you've built, and now I want to be in it and disrupt it.
Yeah, like Never Have I Ever, for instance, or even something like a Sex Education, are all tropes that upend the Sweet Valley highness of something, right? Where it takes a trope or a setting that has become very associated with a particular kind of living and people, and then interrupting it and telling your own stories. And I do enjoy when people do that. I think, as you said, varying degrees of success, but I feel like there's so much space within which people can do that, and I'm really there for it.
So let us know, are you up for modern retellings of old tales? old here, clearly we even mean Sweet Valley High. But yes, you know, how do you feel about this when we have new authors responding to formative texts that maybe don't fit in so neatly into how we see the world now? You can let us know. WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Tweet us at BFM Radio. Write to us at buythebook@bfm.my.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.